How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Yo.
What the?
I have no idea, man. That was just the weirdest. Like, I wasn't even pissed. It happened. I was like, well, shit.
So I was watching with a league pass delay.
Oh, God.
So I knew that they lost, and I was like, how the fuck did this happen? Like, they're up two, shooting at the free throw line, and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What the hell happened?
Yeah, you can't be on Twitter, like, on a tweet deck, watching on, like, a League Pass mobile or online. Like,
I didn't see Twitter. I just saw the score on the
scoreboard. Oh, okay.
And the scoreboard is actually the right time.
The real time. So, I gotcha.
So I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Oh, God. So that must have even enhanced the experience. Yeah, that was
wild.
That was weird. That was a weird, it was just a shitty game all around. So let's just do it. You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. Especially when the season get hectic, I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King locked on trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Millies.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast. Here for you Monday through Friday, even on a day like this, following the Celtics, just weird, improbable, but sort of makes sense, lost to the Phoenix Suns, dropping.
How does that sort of make sense?
No, because the way that game went, I don't believe necessarily in karma, but this is a hell of an argument for it. By the way, that's Jay King that you just heard. I'm John Corrales. If you're just listening for the first time, we're the Rain and Jays. Yeah, the Celtics lost. It made sense because Jaylen Brown missed a free throw. Isaiah Thomas missed that free throw. And when Isaiah Thomas missed that first free throw, I sat there and I was like, oh, man, I don't like this. I said that out loud. I didn't like it. I didn't like the way that was going because they put up the graphic that he was 9 of 9 for the game, 91% for the season. I'm like, oh, boy, here we go. Misses the first one. I just didn't like any of that. And it just, for some reason, when it bounced off and Ulis got it and shot it, I knew it was going in. As soon as he shot it, I said, this is just going to be how it goes. And boom, I stood there. I had no reaction whatsoever. Just for me, it kind of felt like that's what the Celtics deserved on a game like that. That's how it deserved to end for them.
You don't believe in karma, but you do believe in the basketball gods.
The basketball gods spoke. Like Zeus throwing thunder and lightning from the heavens. That turnover was a bad turnover. That was as bad a turnover as it gets.
That was just, I mean, that type of turnover, I don't think the Celtics have had a turnover like that all season with Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah.
Like, he has not kicked the ball away on a single inbounds pass all season long. And it just happened to be that he did it after Eric Bledsoe had tied the game with 4 seconds left. And then Tyler Ulis, who killed the Celtics all game.
Yeah.
Of course he drills it. Like, there's no doubt he's drilling that after that turnover happened.
Yeah.
There was zero chance he was missing that.
It looked to me that Isaiah kind of lost sight of the situation. And with 4 seconds left, he wanted the ball to kind of, like, bounce a little bit so he can get ahead of steam and take full advantage of the 4 seconds to run up and get a shot off in time, like a good shot. And I don't know if he just didn't realize that Phoenix was going to be pressuring or didn't pay attention to them pressuring. But as soon as he turned around, and I forget who deflected it, but as soon as he turned around, he's like, oh, no, there's somebody there. And he kicked the ball away. So Jay Crowder, after the game, took blame for the turnover, saying that, you know, he should have thrown the pass earlier. But to me, I'm putting that on Isaiah because it looked like he just kind of lost sight of what was happening. I don't know what your take is on it, but it looked like to me that he wanted to let the ball bounce a couple of times so he can get a full head of steam and get at least a decent look to win the game.
Yeah, and what's too bad is they spent some timeouts calling or subbing, going offense defense so that Isaiah Thomas didn't have to play defense, and then we're out of timeouts because of that on the final possession. And you know, if they have a timeout, they have 4 seconds left with a half court play. Brad Stevens can draw up. Instead, they have to go the full length of the court, which is tough enough to begin with, and then obviously impossible once you kick away the inbounds pass.
Yeah.
So,
but
just a tough scenario the whole way through.
I'm not going to fault the timeout thing because the Celtics have been able to score without timeouts. That's not a big deal for me. The bigger thing is it just comes down to fundamentals. Hit your free throws. Hit your free throws down the stretch. And it's hard for me to get on Isaiah Thomas when he was, what was he for the game? 10 of 11. But that one miss was a crucial miss. Because if you make that and you go 2 for 2 in that situation, then you're up 3 and that changes the entire dynamic of that final play. The Suns don't go for 2 in that situation, I don't think, with that little time left. You can't, you're relying on that free throw game with 4 seconds or so left. That's not enough time. They would have had to gone for 3. And even if they'd hit that 3, it would have been a tie game and the Celtics would have at least, it wouldn't have been the same situation is what I'm saying.
And then you have the Brown missed free throw with 20 seconds left.
Yep.
That would have put the Celtics up 4. Instead, Bledsoe comes back with a quick, super easy quick two.
Way too easy.
With 13 seconds left, puts him down 1 and set the stage for that whole bizarre, absolutely insane ending.
This was this was very much what happened. This is like the Spurs Miami finals game where Ray Allen hit that 3 because Ginobili and Kawhi Leonard missed free throws in similar situations. When that stuff happens, there's just this weird way of it working out against you in basketball. You got to make your free throws in those situations or else somehow the ball bounces a certain way and ends up burning you more often than not. So whatever you want to call it, karma, basketball gods, however it is, I've seen enough basketball in my life to know that if you don't do those simple things like hit your free throws in those situations and force them to get desperate, then you put yourself in a position to get burned in a big way. You're right. If Jaylen Brown hits his free throw, then, and Jaylen Brown was 5 of 10 from the line. That's tough. And I it's hard to get crazy on a rookie, but 5 of 10 is terrible. You hit that free throw. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say 5 of 10. Not ideal.
Not ideal.
At least he got there 10 times.
Which is great. Amazing. You got to make more than 5 of those. So if you hit that, put them in a situation where they're up, where you're up 4, then they get desperate. Then that going for the 2 maybe doesn't feel as much of a possibility for them. They start going for 3s, and you never know. They might make the 3s, but at least they're taking much lower percentage shots. So that's – look, the Celtics spent so much of this game being terrible that this is the type of loss that they deserve. They came back in that fourth quarter and had a chance to win. And this would have been, if they had won it, a game they didn't deserve to win. And it turns out being a game they deserve to lose. They spent, and of course, no Avery Bradley, no Al Horford. That very much hurt. They were going down the stretch in the fourth quarter, earlier in the fourth quarter, with Jordan Mickey on the floor, Gerald Green, and Terry Rozier, who Rozier had a pretty nice game. He had a really good game, but
that was a really good game from him. One of his best games in a while.
Yeah, but look, Mickey and Gerald in the fourth quarter of a tight game. That's again, not ideal. So
this would probably be a good time to discuss the injuries for Avery Bradley, who seems like he'll be back tomorrow or today by the time you guys are listening to this. He had sore hamstrings. And then Al Horford, who has an elbow issue now, and his status is a little bit more unclear. He hurt it against the Lakers. And so they both missed the game. And that's huge. Those are two of the Celtics' best all-around players, two of their best offensive players, two of their best defensive players. So when you lose guys who mean that much to you, then you have to rely on guys doing things they don't normally do. And there was just no energy in the first half, especially. The Celtics shot 27% in the first quarter, 30.2% for the first half. They were missing layup after layup. They were 2-for-13 at the rim in the first half, just 8 points in the paint during the first half. Tyler Zeller, he was sick, and he looked unhealthy.
He looked sick. He made me sick watching the game.
He looked very much unhealthy. It was, but it's hard to single him out.
Because you're right.
Everybody in that first half and really through the end of the third quarter was bad. The defense was bad. Ulis and Booker got going. Bledsoe torched them. So there was not a lot to like from this game except for Rozier hitting some big shots. Smart, I thought he had some great hustle plays in the fourth. Obviously, Isaiah Thomas made a lot of plays in the fourth, but missed the big free throw and then literally kicked the game away.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, if that shot doesn't go in, I think we're talking about Rozier's awesome game. I think we're talking about Jay Crowder, who had 16 and 10. And is really showing.
And the huge and one. The huge and one.
That was a great play. And
Mr.
I thought
Bledsoe
he should have.
Had kind of flopped.
Yeah. When I was watching that, I'm like, why isn't he passing? Because he had, I believe, Amir Johnson right under the basket for an easy dish. But he just kept taking it and he got the and one. I think one of the nicest developments post All-Star break is that Jay Crowder is doing that kind of stuff now. He's getting all the way to the rim, where after his ankle injury, up until the All-Star break, he was stopping and pulling up and taking mid-range jumpers. That's a big deal.
Yeah, I was looking at his free throw attempts, and I picked a random date because that was when he started drawing free throws. But he's averaged 4.7 free throw attempts per game since January 28th. And before that, it was just 2.2. So there's a huge difference in his desire to get to the hoop, his ability to get to the hoop and draw contact. And obviously, he's been a lot more aggressive. He hasn't knocked down shots at the same rate, but he's become pretty much a knockdown shooter. And when he's getting to the hoop, it spices up their offense a little bit because they need those secondary sources of free throws in addition to Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah. The Celtics team leader tonight in free throws, Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart took 12 free throws, which is another nice development, even though he didn't shoot particularly well. I think he's fallen back into some bad habits, and maybe some of it has been a combination of some... there were a few games where the Celtics were just kind of like, I think, looking at Isaiah to do too much, and because Marcus Smart is just so willing to be like, well, screw it. If you're not going to shoot, I'll shoot. He doesn't care. So I think there's some of that, and I think tonight he took some shots that those above the break threes that are just terrible for him. But he's driving a lot more. He is getting to the line a lot more. He's finally getting the calls. Remember earlier in the season, when we were sitting there saying, Marcus doesn't get any calls. He's driving. He's not getting the fouls. They're finally coming around to respecting his drives, and he's getting a few of those calls. So
it cracked me up when they were posting him up against TJ Warren. And TJ Warren is a big man, like 6'8", 230, 235, like a big wing. And the Celtics were just running post-up offense through Marcus Smart, and it was working.
Yeah.
He was drawing free throws. That really started their run, and then Rozier hit the 2 3-pointers at the end of the third quarter. But it all started with Smart posting up a guy like 5 inches taller than him. he's such a unique player, Marcus Smart. He's really fascinating to watch because there are very few players who, actually probably no player who has like the entire package of is a terrible shooter but can get on hot streaks. Like he's become a great post-up player. He has this nifty, he's become a nifty pick and roll passer, but his finishing is still suspect, and obviously his hustle in the fourth quarter. He had that one where he laid out to get it away from, I think, Chris, who blocked a lot of shots. Marquise Chris blocked a lot of shots.
Yeah.
And then there was the steal he had when they were down, I think, 4, and he just jumped into a passing lane and chased it down. And then Isaiah Thomas found Jaylen Brown for a 3-pointer later in the possession. So Smart had he didn't shoot well. 1 for 5, I think he was, from the field. But
yeah,
other than that, had a really good game.
Yeah. On that aside, Chris, Phoenix is super athletic. Like, they are just a bunch of young pogo sticks jumping around all over the place. A lot of block shots coming off the help side and just coming in and just swatting shots away. They blocked 11 shots. Oh, no, wait. 10 shots in tonight's game, 5 of them from Chris. So that Suns team, after this draft, I don't know what they're going to get in this draft. They'll get a good pick. They can turn this around and be pretty good pretty quickly, I think. But that's just an aside.
Even though they traded Isaiah Thomas for Marcus Thornton in a late first round pick.
Even so, they can. Yeah, that was, oh my God, so bad. On the bad side, and something that could have helped the Celtics win tonight, a couple of guys. Kelly Olynyk, when he's bad, he is just bad. He didn't score. He missed a couple of layups. He looked slow. One of our writers on Reds Army, Mike Dynam, calls him the giraffe on ice. When he has that type of game,
that is a cruel nickname.
It's cruel, but it's so accurate, right? When you think about him, the way the slow motion giraffe on ice drives, and I'm an Olynyk guy. I believe in Kelly Olynyk, but I don't think these games, well, let me just rephrase that before I say something stupid. These games do not help him at all. These are the games that he needs to just, I don't know why he has them. Maybe he just can't deal with some of the athleticism and when he's trying to go up against more athletic guys, but he continues to lack aggression, and it's that lack of aggression that ultimately hurts him and causes him to have games like this, where people are tweeting at me, and I'm sure at you, that Olynyk looks useless. And tonight he was useless. And again, that's coming from a guy who believes in Kelly Olynyk and thinks that Kelly Olynyk is a very important contributor to the Celtics' success this season right now. If he had just had a decent game, this would have been a 10-point win.
Instead, it was not a 10-point win. Yeah, Olynyk 0 for 5. 0 points, 4 rebounds in 22 minutes. And especially with Al Horford out, you need more from Kelly Olynyk. You need a little bit from him. And that's part of why, you know, Jordan Mickey's out there, because Zeller and Olynyk just weren't very good. So, yeah, Olynyk, he has this, like, when he is confident and when he is, he might be the most hesitant good player I've ever seen, though. Like when he
totally is.
When he is riding a rush of confidence, he can look so good and he can be so good and he shows off all his skills. And then when it goes the other way, and you can tell, it's so easy to tell. But he's got to be able to break himself out of that. Like he has to be able to remind himself, like, yo, Kelly, you're pretty good.
Yeah.
It would be nice.
That's
instead you get games like tonight's where he just doesn't have it and can't snap out of it and can't realize, even when things aren't going well for him, that he's still a good basketball player.
Yeah. And that, I think that's the most important thing, is that he is a good basketball player, but when he plays the right way, when he can't be lazy or lack confidence or anything like that. Some guys can kind of get past that. He cannot. But when he is going well, when things are going good for him, man, he can be a really good player. And I know there are people who are listening right now that just don't believe that because they only see the negative parts. He can be so good. And I really think that if the Celtics could find a way to keep him long term, depending on what they do this offseason, I think that would really end up benefiting them. But I can also see them walking away from him and saying, you know, we got to figure this out a different way. But man, God, it's just so frustrating. Like he's definitely one of the more frustrating players to watch on this team because of all the things that he can do and help us out so much, to have a game like tonight where he was just so terrible, that alone is a very frustrating element to a very frustrating loss. The one fun thing, if there's any solace in tonight's game, is that we got to see a jump ball between Isaiah Thomas and Tyler Ulis.
And the Isaiah Thomas spin in the corner after just barely releasing the shot. He did the full spin celebration knowing it was going in.
That was good. Those are two fun moments. And I wish we could truly enjoy those to their full extent. But sigh, deep sigh. But that jump ball was just so epic. Especially, they looked so small when they're surrounded by all those big guys. When they're out in space, you kind of forget sometimes how small they are. But when they're sitting there in the middle of the jump circle and all of those huge people are standing around them, you're like, oh my God. It's like watching two children jump ball. That was like a stark reminder of how small they are. And amazing that for a good point, well, I guess Isaiah was probably the best player on the floor today. He scored 35. I mean, he didn't shoot particularly well, but I mean, Ulis had just a monster game. He crushed the Celtics. For the two smallest guys out there to be that good was kind of interesting.
And they seemed to fully enjoy the fact that they had a jump ball against each other. Like Isaiah was just smiling, laughing it up. Like for the first time ever, he probably lined up at a jump ball and was maybe the favorite, maybe not the favorite, but
it was at least even. It was at least even.
It was at least even. And it was a fun moment. You know what was fun too? I went to see Lonzo Ball play last night.
Oh yeah. How was that?
He can really, really pass the ball. Man. Like it's obvious. He can really, really pass the ball. But I think watching him in person is a little different because you can see, like, players don't look open, and then he throws this transition pass that leads them to where they need to be open. And, I mean, he's an incredible passer. I'm not sure he's strong enough to get to the paint all the time in the NBA. His jumper still
I was just gonna ask you,
even though it goes in, but I mean, he is 6'6", he's athletic, he can pass. There's just a lot of good players in this draft. Fultz, Ball, Josh Jackson, Jason Tatum. There's a lot of good prospects in this draft. Anywhere in the top four. I know Celtics fans don't want the third or fourth pick. They definitely want top one or two, but even three or four, the Celtics are gonna get a good player.
Yeah, yeah. The jumper is what I was going to ask you about, because in person, I wanted to see what you thought.
It's just as gross in person. but it goes in, man. Like, what are you going to say when He has a quick release, which helps. It's not like the type. It's not like he's going to get it blocked all the time because he has a super quick release. I mean, if you look at Stephen Curry, even Curry has a low release, and it's okay because he gets it off super quick, and ball kind of just like flings it immediately, and it works. He's really fun. He guarded a power forward, and gave him hell. Like he's got an energy to him. Like there are a few guys who have that energy and can infuse that energy into a team like he does. And he's just got it. I had a scout text me during the game. He's got it, bro. and
interesting.
Yeah, he just kind of has it.
Interesting. So I think, well, let's just dive into this for a second. So Markelle Fultz is basically done playing college basketball. And yep. And Ball is definitely not, and will be playing well into the, you know, for the rest of this month. Is this going to be a situation where I feel like Fultz, I know there's some discussion about 1-2-3. I feel like the consensus has been Fultz, Ball, Jackson, 1-2-3. But are we going to get into a situation where because Fultz sat out, is Ball going to be able to just wow some people? And if they make a run, he could go first?
See, I'm not sure. I do think Ball has really helped him this year. And by the way, this is the portion of the podcast where two guys who have watched these players play probably like 10 times
yeah.
total are going to debate about who should go number one or two. But yeah, I mean, sometimes a run makes a difference. I do think, you know, everybody's seen these guys so often, and everybody knew watching Washington that Washington was no good. Like Fultz's teammates, I was going to say all due respect to them, but they don't deserve my due respect. that is not a good team. So it's really tough to judge, like. But
right.
at the same time, like when the last impression a guy makes is going on a huge spree in the NCAA tournament, whether it's, you know, Jim or Fredette, whoever else, like that matters. It's the last impression a guy leaves. You know, Buddy Hield last year, Buddy Hield went on a
right
awesome run, and like it probably matters. But they everybody's seen Fultz, everybody's seen Ball. They know what those players are, and I don't think it'll make a huge difference, but maybe a bit of a difference, especially if Ball leads, you know, them to the Final Four or whatever and has close to a couple triple-doubles along the way and throws passes that almost no one can throw. But, yeah, it does sound like probably Fultz is a leader in the clubhouse for number one, but there are some people who support Ball out there.
Mm-hmm.
Especially over the last like month or so, I've heard from a couple people, not a ton of people, but a couple NBA people who have fallen in love with Ball and prefer him to Fultz at this time. And then after that, you hear a lot about Jackson, a lot about Jason Tatum. I'm not sure Jackson's definitely number three, but there are a few guys. Jonathan Isaacs, he's up there. So there's a lot of good prospects, a lot of good players. Celtics are really lucky to have a good pick in this draft.
Yeah, which is great because, you know, the one question after the trade deadline is, like, what are you going to do with all those picks? I don't know. Make them, I guess, if you have to.
Make them?
Select?
Add someone, add a great prospect to
right.
a really good team?
If all these NBA scouts are like, oh man, this guy is amazing. And they're saying that about a few different guys. Like, maybe you just add that guy to your team instead of, you know, of course, we all want to make a trade and whatever, but, you know, what the hell? If your worst case scenario is potentially selecting Fultz or Ball or with the one or two pick, that's a pretty good worst case scenario.
Yeah, not a bad worst case scenario at all. And then see what happens. I mean, the Celtics have all good paths ahead. It's just whether they can make it great. That's the only difference, is whether they can push themselves from number two in the East or close to it to a real contender. And obviously, like you say, that's the toughest part. But then the Celtics get to that spot in their development, and it's like, wow, they're really still a long way away from Cleveland and Golden State, even though they've been so good this year, even though Isaiah Thomas has become a star, even though they signed Al Horford. It's like they still need a lot of improving before they can consider themselves true contenders, I think. And obviously anything can happen. Injuries happen, whatever. But to me, they're still a long way away, and they still need to make big moves, whether it's internally, whether it's, you know, somebody like Jaylen Brown becomes a star, or Lonzo Ball or Markelle Fultz comes in and kind of changes things from what they have, or go out, get another star. Who knows? But
this is still a rebuild. This is still the upswing of a rebuild.
You're going to call the number two team a rebuild?
No, this is what the rebuild is. This is the first real year of the rebuild paying off. And yeah, they're the two seed. We thought that they'd be good enough to be the two or three seed. But yeah, it's still part of the rebuild. Like, they've still got another move. Maybe it's, you know, when you talk about rebuilding, you've rebuilt the house. Now you need the paint job. It's still not done yet, though. It's still, the house is not finished. It's obvious that the house is not finished. They're close. They're really close. And through some luck, they've still managed to be the two seed, even after tonight, where Washington won and they lost and the Celtics failed to take advantage of an opportunity. They are still a 40-win team and one of five teams to have won more than 40 games. They're up two on the Washington Wizards, up three on the Raptors. But there is still room to get better. If they face the Cavaliers in the seven-game series, no one would pick them to do very well at all. They might lose in five or six, right? I mean, there's a question as to whether they'll get even past Toronto or Washington. There's still room to move, which is fine.
You would rather have the Celtics play Toronto in round two? I see you rooting against the Wizards.
I'm rooting for anybody. I was rooting against the Wizards. I'm rooting against the Wizards. I'm rooting against the Raptors. I'm rooting against the Hawks.
I'm just all lose.
Everybody. I want everybody behind the Celtics to lose. I want to solidify that two seed. So at this point, I don't care. I really don't care if they play the Wizards or the Raptors. I suppose it's probably more advantageous to play the Wizards because they're less reliable, and Toronto has kind of loaded up a little bit. If they get Lowry back and healthy, then yeah, Toronto's probably the most dangerous team out there that you can face before facing the Cavaliers. But whatever. At that point, I don't care. I really don't, because it doesn't matter. If you're facing them in the semifinals, you face one, you face the other, whatever. You're going up against Cleveland in the finals or Golden State or San Antonio in the finals. I mean, that'd be amazing, but I don't expect that. I really don't expect that. So the Celtics' second-round opponent is really of no real concern for me.
There you go. By the way, this road trip could get bad.
Yeah, it could.
Like, there's some – it went from, okay, they're going to beat Phoenix and go to 2-0, and even if they lose three, like, okay, whatever, to now you don't have Al Horford. You lost to the Suns. You've got the Clippers and Golden State Warriors on deck. And then the Denver Nuggets, who have Nikola Jokic playing out of his mind and have the home court advantage of the thin air in Denver. So scary road trip now the rest of the way.
Could be a tough one. Could be a tough one. I suppose we should kind of set the scene for this week, because being out west – the Celtics are going to be playing some late games, 10:30 on Monday, 10:30 on Wednesday. The Nuggets game is a Friday night. We don't do podcasts on Friday night. But I sure as hell am not staying up till 1 in the morning to do a show. I'm sorry. I love you guys. We're going to have to do some shows like Monday, the Tuesday show when we record Monday night, the Wednesday show, the Thursday show, which we record Wednesday night. We'll have to kind of catch up on what happened afterwards. Just want to let you guys know, be upfront with you. We'll watch the games, but I'm going to be watching and like going to sleep as soon as the game is over. So we'll figure it out. We'll catch up kind of afterwards. We'll cover some other topics in the podcast during the week. We'll still be here. We'll just kind of catch up on those games a little bit afterwards. So hopefully they can go out and survive against the Clippers. I mean, maybe they can beat the Clippers. Maybe they can beat the Nuggets. Maybe they can beat the Warriors. I don't know. The Warriors are kind of up and down. Maybe there's an opportunity there. If Al Horford can come back, I hope he's not out too long. Maybe they can sneak a couple of these wins, but it doesn't look good. Be honest with you. Doesn't look good.
There's bad potential now. And maybe they sneak out a couple, but there is bad potential.
On the plus side, after that, they've got Chicago, who's playing on a non-TNT night, so that might be a win. And then they've got Minnesota, Brooklyn, Philly, and then a big game against the Wizards after that. So they've got at least three cupcakes and a Chicago game that could be interesting on a Sunday afternoon. So even if the road trip goes badly, maybe they can go come back and string a few wins together and make up for it.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Potentially.
It's potential. It's there. It exists. All right. So that's it. If you are not a subscriber to the show, please subscribe to us wherever you find your podcast. If you're a new listener, I do want to thank you for finding us and listening and hopefully becoming a new subscriber. If you are a subscriber and you have not rated us 5 stars on iTunes, I will please ask you politely to do so, because it's a real big help to us, not just for our egos, not just for our general well-being, because we want to spread the word and get new subscribers and get new people. It helps us out. It gets us more views, more listens, more all of that stuff. And we'll maybe make a couple extra bucks. After games like tonight, I need a couple extra bucks to go buy myself more beer, because I need it to wash away the stink of a 109-106 loss to the Suns on just a horrible last 10 seconds of the game. That's it.
I mean, that was just preposterous.
It really was just an unbelievable, just horrible, ugh, of a game. All right. Go do what you got to do, guys, whether you're driving, working out, running, avoiding work. Go back to it. The show is over. This has been the Locked On Celtics Podcast. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, J. King and Doc Carrasco.